We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
David Cobb writes for CBS Sports, also reports for CBS Sports. He does his rounds talking as well. But he covers college football and college basketball for them. He is on X at David W. Cobb. He's been doing the rounds today, but he's agreed to hop on the Gabe Kuhn Show because he loves us that much. David, what's happening, brother?
That's right, Gabe. When I see the text come through from you, I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's a call I can take. So I'm happy to hear from you, and man, What a 24 hours in college basketball, getting through those conference tournament championship games, selection show, and now figuring out what the heck do you do with this bracket.
Yeah, so what the heck do we do with this bracket? Let's start with snubs. Who do you think got snubbed? I think Indiana State is the most the one everybody is mad at because everybody wanted to see Robbie Avila, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Is that what we're calling him now, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
That's right. Yeah, I've heard that one a couple times today. Pretty amazing that a mid-major kid who didn't even make the tournament is like a cult hero. Like, that's a guy, Robbie Avila, who, if he had gotten onto the stage of March Madness, would have taken off. However, Indiana State is going to be the first team ever to finish in the top 30 of the net and not make the NCAA tournament.
That's
a shame, right? Because we'd love to see those mid-major teams in the big dance, but when it comes down to it, all those upsets we saw during conference tournament week and all those one-bid leagues that turned into two-bid leagues with bid thieves, those teams are the ones keeping a team like Indiana State out. And it's a shame, especially now that it looks like they might lose their coach to St. Louis. But, man, the perils of March, man, your entire fate hangs on one little criteria or one opinion of one person on a committee, and that's rough.
Yeah, so are we going to go Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or something that just got posed to me by Connor while we were having that conversation, Derry Bird? Because he is at Indiana State. Derry Bird or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Which one's better?
I like Derry Bird.
I like Derry Bird. That's fantastic. Now, when we look at the bracket in general, the first thing that popped out to me, and it's not even close, is when you look at the East region. The top four, in my opinion, conference tournament winners are all in it. UConn, Auburn, Iowa State, and Illinois as the top four seeds there. That was an interesting choice by the committee, right?
Oh, yeah. I think if you're an Iowa State fan, you got a lot of reasons to be mad at that committee because they were getting buzzed as a potential number one seed. After crushing Houston in the Big 12 tournament championship game, Iowa State had a case to be a number one. Well, not only are they not a number one, but they are the number two in the toughest region. And so if you're an Iowa State fan, you're looking up and you're seeing UConn in your field. You're seeing SEC champion Auburn in your region. And, you're thinking, what the heck? What did we do to deserve this? Illinois won the Big Ten championship as well on the number three line. So, brutal in the East. So, Iowa State kind of got the shaft. And I guess UConn could be mad, too. Although, as well as they're playing and as much of a role as they're on, I mean, I don't know that it matters too
just
much.
Just roll out anybody against them.
Yeah, honestly. And actually, the truth is, in the bracket I filled out last night, I don't have UConn making the Final Four. But I don't know. It's just because I just think something's crazy is going to happen. It's not because I think UConn's bad or, you know, it's just March, right? Like, you got to pick an upset somewhere. But, that's a fun region. But, gosh, it's got to be tough if you're a coach in that bracket looking at your way and your path to the Final Four.
Yeah, and then also in that East region, you have San Diego State, who was in the national championship game last year, and FAU is an 8 seed who made it to the Final Four. I mean, it's just absolutely loaded. I can't stress that enough. It's kind of nuts to see what all has happened with that East region. Now, when we look at the number one seeds, UConn, Houston, Purdue, and North Carolina, who has the easiest road to the Final Four, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it might actually be North Carolina. That Mississippi State-Michigan State 8-9 game is interesting. I don't know that the winner of that game is altogether a threat, though, unless you're just totally in on Tom Izzo and it being March and this being his month, and you just never know with the Spartans. And that's all true, I guess, to a certain extent. But North Carolina is a really good defensive team, more so than they have been in recent years. But they haven't really sacrificed anything offensively because R.J. Davis and Armando Bacot are balling out. They're getting a ton from Cormac Ryan and Harrison Ingram. And then you look at the four seed and the potential Sweet 16 matchup for North Carolina. Alabama is struggling going into this NCAA tournament. They are not playing well. And they're only a four seed because of their standing in some of the advanced metrics. That's a team with 11 losses. And they face a tough path just to get to the Sweet 16 because they got to get through College of Charleston, which is a serious team at the 13 seed line. And then maybe play St. Mary's in the second round. So I just think there's a decent chance that if North Carolina gets to the Sweet 16, they're either playing a double-digit seed or they're playing an Alabama team that has just been not at its best the last several weeks.
Yeah, and I know Alabama just extended Nate Oates and gave him a massive contract extension in general. But what do you think about his style of coaching and if he'll ever get through and get to a Final Four, get to a national championship with Alabama and the style he plays? Because honestly, I mean, just when it comes down to his style of play, we've talked about it on several occasions, David, it's just make more shots. That's what he asked them to do. And if they don't have an elite defensive effort, and they don't make shots, they're going to lose ball games.
Yeah, I think Alabama would be a great best of seven team. And maybe if the Big Ten and the SEC get their wish and college sports becomes professional sports just on a collegiate level, and we can kick all these stupid mid-major teams out and just have a major conference invitational with a best of seven, or something every series. And then I think Alabama is a threat to win the national title because of the way they play. But in this format, the NCAA tournament that we all know and love, where you got to be at your best for six games in a row and where one bad outing can get you bounced, I don't know that their style of play is conducive to making a run because they're so reliant on the three-point shot, which is great over the course of a year because the analytics and the percentages bear out that those are the smarter shots. But they're also the shots that you're least likely to make. And on a night when you go cold, yeah, you can get in real trouble with Alabama. But they trick the metrics because they can really lay it on the bad teams. They go fast. But then you get down to a team that plays defense, and you make Alabama guard, and they get in trouble. So, yeah, I think Nate Oates is a great coach. He's probably going to go down as the greatest coach in Alabama basketball history by the time it's all said and done. But yeah, his style has not worked in March to this point.
Now, holler at me about lower seeds. I know you just mentioned sort of looking at, you know, that group of Alabama, Charleston, St. Mary's, and Grand Canyon as a potential for playing a double digit seed if Alabama gets through. But what are some of the lower seeds that you like to make a run?
Yeah, let's go over to the Midwest region for that. I love McNeese. Will Wade, man, back at it. He, you know, of course, with the LSU coach who got banished in 2022 amid a big-time NCAA investigation. And that man, he was suspended for his first 10 games of this year at McNeese as a result of the fallout,
right,
everything that happened at LSU. In spite of that, he's got McNeese at 30 victories and playing in the NCAA tournament. And there's actually some meat on the bone, too, because they beat UAB on the road. They won at Michigan. They beat VCU on the road. So they challenged themselves a little bit, and they won those games. I think they won all those games by double digits, too. So I'm terrified if I'm Gonzaga. Like, I know a lot of casual fans are looking at Gonzaga as a five seed, maybe not having paid attention to the Zags this season and thinking, oh, wow, we can get good value on Gonzaga. They're a five? Don't think that. Gonzaga's more like an eight or a nine. And you see a 12-5 upset every year. This year, the one that I'm calling is number 12 seed McNeese over Gonzaga. That's just not your typical Gonzaga team, and McNeese is legit.
Yeah, and a 19-game turnaround. That was nuts. And also seeing him in his opening presser and the promise he made. Yeah, we lost 23 games, but I guarantee going into next year we're going to win 23 games plus and turn this whole thing around. One of the biggest turnarounds in college basketball history. The fact that he was able to accomplish that. Well, I mean, do you think he'll get a job this offseason with what could potentially open, or do you think that he'll sort of sit on his hands and wait at least a little bit?
It'll depend on how eager he is to jump. Like, let's not pretend as though life in Lake Charles, Louisiana is glamorous.
Right.
He's down there in the Southland Conference, right? And he's on a little bit of a rehabilitation tour. And, you know, I thought Chris Beard was going to be out of it for a little bit longer. Well, he jumped right back in, and you could argue, you know, the things that he was accused of were a little bit nastier and harder to deal with for schools from a perception standpoint than what Will Wade was accused of, which now in the pay-for-play era, I think Will Wade's legacy and reputation are going to be on the upswing in the years to come, because we're going to look back and not be so just horrified at the fact that he was trying to pay players, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what we're all moving toward now. It's like Kelvin Sampson getting in trouble 10 or 15 years ago when he was at Indiana for
making calls,
texting a
right.
Yeah, right. Or texting a prospect 10 hours after a deadline, and we practically tried to ruin his career over that. Well, now we all look back, and most of us have great respect for Kelvin Sampson and think he's one of the greatest coaches in the game and think of him as somebody with character. I'm not necessarily predicting that we're going to look at Will Wade and think of a man of character in 10 years, but I don't know that we're going to look at him and think he's just, you know, the worst thing to ever happen to college basketball either. So I think an enterprising athletic director that wants to turn things around quickly would be smart to go out and get Will Wade right now. And then that would put the ball in his court to say, hey, are you willing to jump at the first power conference job that offers, or do you want to wait and maybe go for the right job or the best fit? Because my man is 41 years old, and he's already on his fourth Division I head coaching job. He might just want to sit back and enjoy his accomplishments for a year.
Now, holler at me about Tennessee and Rick Barnes. They have a chance to play Texas, which would be a fun storyline in itself if we have Tennessee versus old job at Texas. But what do you think about Tennessee heading into the tournament? I was surprised as hell they got knocked out early in the SEC tournament by Mississippi State, of all people.
Yeah, not only did they get knocked out, but they played like garbage in that game. That was as bad as Tennessee's played all year, and now they've lost two in a row for the first time since November, because they also lost at home to Kentucky on Senior Day. So I was in that Tennessee locker room after the game in Nashville the other day, and it was a somber scene. But, of course, you know, that wasn't what they were playing for. That's not their ultimate goal. And so perhaps, you know, if you want to look at the glass half full perspective, Tennessee uses that loss as motivation to refocus. And so I don't feel great about kind of where they are in terms of the way they've been playing, but I kind of like their draw. I don't think that draw is too terribly difficult. Like, you know, St. Peter's is up first, and they're going to have Tennessee's attention because we all remember what St. Peter's did, you know, 2 years ago. A totally different team now, but still, that name, you're not going to overlook them because of what they did. And then the second round matchup, you get Virginia, they've been playing awful. You get Texas, they are very middle of the road in the Big 12. Or Colorado State out of the Mountain West, which did most of its good work in the first half of the season. So I think you got three teams there that, for the most part, played their best basketball in the first half of the season, which sets Tennessee up to maybe win that second round game and at least get to the second weekend. Beyond that, we'll see. It's Tennessee, it's Rick Barnes, and it's March. You're going to have a lot of doubts. And with the way they've been playing, they got to show us something this week for me to really buy the fact that they're a Final Four contender.
But their one seed is Purdue. I think everybody's like tendency at this point is to rule out Purdue, just considering what we've seen in the past from Matt Painter when you get into the NCAA tournament. And, of course, they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson as a one seed last year. How do you feel about Purdue? How do you feel about Purdue this year? I feel a lot better considering I think their guard play is just substantially better than it has been and than it was last year.
Yeah, I feel exponentially better about Purdue, and here's why. Last season, they shot the three-pointer at 32.2%. That was 291st in the country. And when they lost to FDU in that first-round game, they made, I think it was 5 out of 27 or 5 out of 26.
Not great.
From beyond the arc. Yeah, it was awful. They couldn't make anything. Well, fast forward to this season, they are shooting 40.8%, which is second in the country from beyond the arc. And that's because Braden Smith has taken a big step forward. Fletcher Lawyer is shooting it better. They got about five or six guys around Zach Edey that are all shooting the ball really well. I don't think they're all going to go cold on the same night again with how good they've been over the course of this season. So I think Zach Edey finally has the supporting cast he needs to take Purdue to the Final Four. And I know a lot of people out there are going to need to see it to believe it, but this Purdue team has been better this season than last year's team was, and Zach Edey is still the best player in college basketball. So I'm pretty high on Purdue because, hey, look, you got to remember, the last time, the only other time, a number one seed lost to a 16, it was Virginia. And then they went on to win the national championship the next year.
I always hated the worst of first mantra, though. Like, I kind of get it because they're clearly not the worst, though, Virginia, when they were the one seed and lost to UMBC, right? They clearly were not the worst if you're a one seed. But, I mean, you feel good about a potential worst to first here for Purdue getting all the way through.
Yeah. I mean, look, this thing is crazy. You never know what's going to happen, right? Like, but I will sit here and guarantee you right now, Gabe, if Purdue loses to a 16 seed for the second year in a row, you name it, right? Like, I'll do it. Like, I'll eat a hot dog with, like, live fire ants on it or something, you know? Like, I mean, it's not going to happen. Like they're going to be okay. I like their second round potential matchups there. Purdue is going to be okay. I think they're going to at the very least make it to the Sweet 16. And I really do believe they have the ingredients they need to make the Final Four.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking with David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X from CBS Sports, talking college football and college basketball. Now, I need some serious talking into, and I don't know if you can do it, with Kansas. We know what happened in the Big 12 tournament. They got absolutely hammered by 20 by Cincy, but they didn't have Kevin McCullough and they didn't have Hunter Dickinson. How worried are you about them on that four line in the Midwest? Do you think they'll be healthy enough? Do you think they'll be okay?
I am pretty worried about Kansas. I do think Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson are going to play. What you saw from Kansas in the Big 12 tournament was a classic case of load management, where they decided to rest those two guys knowing they weren't quite 100% and that a much bigger tournament was laying ahead. And so that's why Kansas played a clunker in the Big 12 tournament. But even with McCullough and Dickinson in the lineup, Kansas lacks depth at a concerning level. They are not deep at all. And their opponent in this first-round game is Samford, which is one of the deepest teams in the country. They get 44% of their minutes from the bench. And this game will be played at altitude, with Samford pressing on every single possession, trying to score 100 points. And so if it goes wrong for Samford, it goes real wrong, and they'll lose this game 98-56 or something. But if Samford is able to bother Kansas and wear Kansas down, and if conditioning is a factor for McCullough and Dickinson because they've been out, we could look up in the second half and Kansas could be trailing this game by 12 points. So I'm pretty worried about Kansas, and I don't have them making a big run in this tournament.
And this is how I felt about them all year, because they're just obviously the depth is concerning, the lack of depth is concerning. But stylistically, this is just not exactly what Bill Self does year to year. Having a guy like Hunter Dickinson that you have to be very purposeful about throwing it into the paint too, and giving him his touches. It's just not. I mean, I haven't seen Kansas do that since what, Cole Aldrich pre-2010. Like, this, it's been a while since this since a Kansas team has operated like this, especially on the offensive end.
Yeah, they're so limited offensively in what they can do, because every other player on that team, aside from Dickinson and McCullough, is pretty much a role player. And when they've got their full complement, they're pretty good. Like, the roles all work for the most part. But when you take one of them out of the equation, or even make one of them less than 100% due to an injury, which is what they've been dealing with here recently, it just sort of throws the whole thing out of whack, because all of a sudden you need DeJuan Harris, who's a pass-first point guard, to go and get you 15 to 18 points. Or you need a true freshman in Johnny Furphy, who needs to put on about 30 pounds of muscle. You need him to go out and be a dynamic scorer for you on the wing, right? And so McCullough and Dickinson make that thing work, and if they're 100%, then Kansas can still make some noise. It's just a tough draw in altitude for a team that's probably not at peak conditioning and already struggling with light depth.
Yep. Now, I want to move to the AAC. How about this? We have a little parting gift for Mike Oresko, who's going to retire after the academic year. He got two teams in, thanks to Temple, or thanks to FAU for not playing well enough, but UAB gets in. And the AAC, with how bad it was, how terrible it was, and I'm sure you can speak to that, it got two teams in, FAU and UAB.
How about it? Good for Mike Oresko. May we never use the term Power Five ever again in his honor.
Or in a way, is it? No, it's funny. Isn't the Power Six mantra kind of being used with the Big East and college basketball right now?
It is, yeah. Yeah, we sort of refer to it as like the Big Six, which it's funny because the Pac-12 is going away.
Right.
So maybe maybe we just put the Mountain West in there and pretend they're a power conference now. I don't know. It's funny, the evolution of language in college basketball. Like, I was sitting next to these guys at the SEC tournament from a website called Southeastern 14. And they're going to have to buy a new URL because the league is expanding, you know? Like, there's just so many, like, little things that happen that change the way we talk about college sports with realignment. But anyway, FAU, I think, got a really favorable seed, actually, given their resume and given how many bid stealers there were. And then UAB, actually, I think could beat San Diego State. Because San Diego State, they want to beat you up, and they want to, like, out-muscle you and out-physical you. But UAB is an elite rebounding team, and they got a dude, Lindeberg, down there who can bruise with the best of them. So I actually think UAB is going to hang with San Diego State.
Well, and then also, like, besides San Diego State, if we just look at the history of the Mountain West in the NCAA tournament, it's not good. It has not been good as of late. Yeah, they get in a lot of teams, and I think they kind of do a little bit of in the net, and when it comes to KenPom and all these predictive metrics, they boost themselves up by playing each other. But the Mountain West, when they get into the tournament, they just fall flat.
Yeah, they're a media darling, too. It's a great product during the regular season. Like, if you're one of these people who stay up late and, like, maybe you're into betting or whatever, like, the Mountain West is tremendous theater because you got some evenly matched teams that play really good games. But I'm with you that when they get to the NCAA tournament, last year was really the first time with San Diego State that the Mountain West broke through and did something of significance in March. And they got enough teams in this year to where, all right, somebody's got to make some noise, or the conversation that we're going to be having 2 weeks from now is about how, wow, look, the Big East got shafted, but they've got two teams in the Elite Eight. And the Mountain West got all these teams in, but they've got nobody left standing after the first weekend. Those are very real conversations that we could be having. And it happens almost every year with the ACC, where the coaches in that conference feel like they got shafted on Selection Sunday and not enough teams in the dance. But then one of them makes the Final Four, and they use that to say, hey, look, we told you that we were a better basketball conference than you've given us credit for. I think there could be some serious storylines along those lines in the weeks ahead because the Big East in particular, getting so few teams in, I mean, their coaches are incensed. I mean, you had Greg McDermott, who is comfortably in as a number three seed, and he was mad talking to the media last night because the conference only got four in. And so it's interesting, and I think you're going to see some teams kind of playing for conference pride, maybe more so than we're used to seeing.
Now, David, I'm going to let the people know, just full disclosure, January 30th, me and you were texting back and forth trying to get something figured out. You ended up coming on that Friday, I believe. But you texted me, you said, hopefully Memphis beats Rice, so it's not just straight misery. And I said, hopefully, but we'll see. And you said, this too shall pass. Spoiler alert, it did not pass, David. This is as bad as it could have ended. They lose to Wichita State, who was 14-18 heading into the AAC tournament. I mean, I didn't necessarily expect them to go through the AAC tournament 4 games in 4 days and win and get a automatic qualifier. But in the end of the day, I didn't expect them to lose first round. I didn't expect that Friday to be my post-mortem for Tiger basketball, and obviously they're not going to be in the NIT. This was a disastrous end to the season. Disastrous.
I think when I look back on this Memphis basketball season, my takeaway, my biggest takeaway, is going to be that November lied and December lied. And I'm not using this as an excuse for Memphis's poor performance in the AAC, but I think, and it wasn't just the Memphis locker room, it was a lot of people around the country who pay attention to college basketball, were misled by their victories. Missouri, Michigan, Arkansas, all teams that we expected to be much better than they were. Those teams were all terrible. Texas A&M wasn't as good as we thought they would be. Virginia, Clemson. Clemson's the only one that really sort of met expectations. I know A&M slipped into the dance and Virginia somehow got in, but by and large, these teams were not nearly as good as we expected them to be. But by virtue of Memphis beating all them, we thought Memphis was good.
Right.
And even Memphis thought Memphis was good. And it turns out that, you know, they weren't. That's my big picture takeaway, is that they actually put together a great schedule and they did what they were supposed to with that schedule. It just turned out the teams that were on it weren't what we thought they were going to be.
But, I mean, even with that, teams in the AAC are not good either, and they still lost 8 games all said and done. So, I agree with your sentiment, but also I sit here and I'm like, well, still, even with that, the teams they were playing were overly beatable. South Florida was overly beatable. You were up by 20. Rice, you have no excuse to ever lose that game against Rice, who fired their coach and was dead last in the AAC. So, in the end of the day, they may have lied to us. The results in November and December may have lied to us, but I think this team really regressed. I really do believe that, too.
Well, I've got their KenPom page pulled up right now, the Memphis page. And if there's one number that sticks out to me that I think they need to try to work on a little bit, it's minutes continuity. Memphis ranked number 342 out of 363 in that realm. And so you're putting a roster together on the fly.
I'm surprised they're only 342, by the way. I'm surprised they're that high.
Right. I would venture to guess nearly every team ranked lower than them had a first-year coach, because those are the only types of programs that you see go through more roster churn than what Memphis did typically, is a team that's just completely lost everything to the portal because of a coaching change. But with Memphis, this next season, if they can get David Jones back to build around him, and I got to look and see how many of these other guys have eligibility remaining, but if you can get David Jones and Naquan Tomlin back and build around them, then, you know, maybe you're 250th in minutes continuity, and you surround them with strategic additions from the portal. I thought that the roster composition last year with Kendrick Davis and DeAndre Williams was better because roles were more clearly defined, and it felt like the portal additions were strategic fits more so than just throwing talent at the wall and seeing what would stick.
Yeah.
And, you know, so this past year, that's kind of what they did. He just got everybody who he could get. At the 11th hour, he got some talented players, but there was no coherent philosophy or scheme-driven analysis of the individual players. It was just a collection of talent, and in the end, that sort of let him down.
And I think the biggest example of that is Jordan Brown, who was off the team, who came back onto the team, and was not good just about all this whole year. He was actually okay in the Wichita State game, believe it or not, by the end. But I remember being excited about that 19-9, looking at 19 rebounds, 19 points, 9 rebounds per game when he was at Louisiana. And I remember you were the first person who threw it back at me, and you're like, listen, this is not what they're used to doing. He moves slow. He likes slow-paced half-court offense, and you have to be intentional about getting him the ball. That was sort of the first time where I looked at it, and I'm like, you know, maybe Penny got distracted with the shiny objects and the stats and less about fit. Because a lot of these guys last year, Demaria Franklin, Keontae Kennedy, Elijah McCadden, they were not big stats guys, but they fit into his defensive philosophy, which on the back end, after that loss to Wichita State, he said this team was never there defensively. Now, we could go after Penny and say, you know, even when you have this collection of talent and you see that you need to skew it to the offensive end, skew it to the offensive end. Be, you know, adjust well. We've seen Penny can't adjust all that well. But at least going into this offseason, if you want to be that defensive team, if you want to have that be your philosophy, recruit guys that do that and don't get worried about how many points per game they score.
And it's got to start today. The portal opened today. Don't wait. There's only a 45-day window. It's been shortened from 60 days. I hope that staff is grinding in some of the deep analytics software right now, identifying guys that fit. I'll give you a good example of one who should come back, who I think he's told Munz and those guys that he is. Nick Dordain, that guy doesn't need the ball in his hands. He doesn't need stats, but he helps. He's helpful. He's useful.
Yep.
He hits open shots. He gets rebounds, and he puts forth effort. I mean, those are the guys that you need, and if they can help you offensively, then so be it. But I love a guy like that, and there are going to be 75 players like that out there in the portal who don't even need a big bag. Of NIL cash. There will be a few that do, that Memphis will probably target. But you can go out and find diamonds in the rough like that guy, Nick Jourdain, who fits your scheme and your system and your needs, and they can go and help you win games. And so if they get Tomlin and they get Jones and they get Jourdain back and they surround them with strategic role players, there's a path forward. But I don't know. It just feels like they're treading water, and I just don't know totally what their identity is on the court at this point.
And we've seen too with coaches that come back to their alma mater, it can go bad in South very quickly. And just look at Juwan Howard for that, 8-24 this year. After a year where he completely underachieved, he couldn't recruit as well. It just sort of happened that way. I'm not going to project that for Penny, but this is a big inflection point for this program under Penny, and we got to see what happens. Now, a last thing for you, NIT bids were denied all over the place. We're setting a hardcore trend. Memphis, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Indiana, Pitt, and St. John's all said no. Now, Tom Crean on ESPN had strong words for it. I'm sure, I don't know if you've heard it at this point, but he basically said, let these coaches play more. Although, in the end of the day for Memphis, I can't imagine that these players, you know, the Javon Quinterlys of the world, the Jaquan Waltons, really want to hit the floor again. And this staff clearly does not want to coach this team again. But the trend is set there. What do you think about the NIT and the bids being completely denied by six teams that would likely be higher seeds?
I don't have any problem with teams that don't want to play in the NIT for any number of reasons. I get where Tom Crean is coming from, but it's circumstantial. And in Memphis' circumstances, these guys didn't come to Memphis to go play in the NIT. The program has been through that. They used that as a building block several years ago, early in Penny's tenure. The time for that has passed. I'm in full agreement with where Memphis is at on all that. But I think it's funny that the NIT and the NCAA changed the rules this year. They took away automatic NIT bids to the conference regular season champions who didn't win their conference tournament and didn't make the NCAA tournament. They took away their NIT bids so they could get more high major teams in, solely for the sake of TV ratings. And now you see the big-name teams, we'll talk about Memphis like that, big-name teams like Memphis saying no thanks. And it's just like, really, the NIT, that can mean everything to like an America East or an Ivy League school. And it doesn't mean anything to most of these high-major programs. So like, why are we trying to take away NIT bids from teams like that when we're going to see power conference programs say, we're good, right? Like, it's just a perfect emblematic sort of look at what's wrong with the direction college athletics is going right now.
Yeah, and are you anti-expansion of the NCAA tournament? I know Greg Sankey was talking to some people over the weekend about, what he said about like St. Peter's and FAU, I thought was just in bad taste too. But are you anti-expansion?
Yeah, right. Oh man, am I ever? Like, I'm so anti-expansion, and I just get nervous about the future of this thing. You know what's going to happen, right? Like, Purdue's going to beat its number 16 seed by 50, and Greg Sankey's going to be sitting there thinking, wow, we could have had Missouri in that game, and would have drawn better TV ratings. You know?
Yeah.
And I'll just be like, oh, come on, get out of here. But no, yeah, I'm anti-expansion. The NCAA tournament is great. The Cinderella storylines are what make it so special. And at the end of the day, I just don't have a ton of sympathy for teams that are on the wrong side of the bubble. I do for Indiana State because they just didn't have the opportunities. But for power conference teams, like these Big East teams that are complaining and these ACC teams that are complaining, you have every opportunity over the course of the season to go win games and play yourself into the bracket. If you get left out, you're not a national title caliber team. And so why are we trying to expand and invite more of those types of teams to the tournament? It didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think I'm anti-watering down championship events. I think that's just where I'm at. Don't water them down.
Yeah.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.